We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
This is our plan. This is part of the deal. You know, we came out the gate trying to really get off to a good start and win a lot of games and see if we can make some noise. That didn't work out. You know, and so now we're in the second phase of it, and we got to get these guys a lot of experience and understanding and let them get their butts kicked some more and let them grow from it. And, you know, we're still stuck to our plan strategically that, you know, if it makes sense, then that's what we're going to make those moves. But if it doesn't, we're going to go keep forging ahead with growing our guys and developing it the right way.
Middays on the Score.
Take that for data. That's David Fizdale, coach of the New York Knicks. You said you had something
funny. You like
funny.
David Fizdale,
I do.
Right?
I really do.
I think most like David Fizdale. I think some thought he got hosed in his prior job. I think most were happy to see him land with the Knicks.
Yeah,
I
Mark Gasol fired him.
Yeah, pretty much. I think he's got a pretty good reputation amongst players. The Knicks, you'll remember, are one of the prime competitors with the Bulls for a bottom three finish in the NBA, and thus a 14% chance at landing the number one pick in the draft, which I still think will be Zion Williamson, assuming his knee is just fine. And even if he had something more serious than Coach K let his knee injury on to be, he still goes number one for you, doesn't he?
Yes.
I mean, even if he's coming back off of something, I think that guy's still there. Well, David Fizdale has now spun the Knicks issues and found a scapegoat. David Fizdale has found his Trotsky. He's blaming it on Fortnite. You can add... That's right.
I'm listening.
You can add David Fizdale to the list of old grizzled sons of guns who don't like Fortnite.
If I have to hear the phrase, can I do it after this game? I will. After this game. After this game. Okay, after this game. Oh, I forgot. After this game.
It's been a common refrain from Fizdale this season, who's blamed the game twice in as many months for his team's issues. Now his biggest source of trouble, an observation that's being contested in the Knicks locker room. Fortnite, that's my competitor right now, Fizdale said in December. Fortnite is tougher than the Boston Celtics. Numerous studies support the idea that blue light interferes with sleep and the body's regular metabolic functions from SB Nation, but it's unclear if it would be enough to do something like, say, cause the Knicks to lose 47 of their 58 this season. I kind of limit my time now after I read that, said Kevin Knox. My energy level is better than it usually was. You can control yourself. There's no problem for you, but if you're reckless with it, you don't think about it, video games, partying, going out, all that other stuff, you end up being in trouble. Fizdale goes on to say, it might be the old man yells at a cloud moment. I'm going to have to get it on, Fizdale said. I'm probably just going to have to be able to connect to them, just be able to do it. I'll get Mitchell to teach me. He can yell at me on that. This will be his time to yell. He can be the coach. Slowly but surely, Fortnite is eroding the wherewithal of one David Fizdale as the Knicks spiral more and more into the depths of nowhere and probably get the number one pick of the NBA draft, thanks to Fortnite.
Contaminating our precious bodily fluids, Fortnite. Nah. It is an issue as far as sleep goes. I don't know about the whole blue light thing, but if people are losing sleep, that's legitimate. Because we know that sleep matters.
Well,
that
of course.
Sleep and travel, if it is affecting that, that's legit. Whether it's Mario Kart or Fortnite, there's nothing specific to Fortnite, the game itself. But if, in fact, there is an addiction to whatever video game this is that is causing guys, or you could argue, where would you rather have them? In the club or in the hotel room?
Well, probably the hotel room.
Right.
But, you know, just because they're playing a game doesn't necessarily mean there aren't club-like activities going on while they're playing.
That's true, but Fortnite
still,
is...
you'd rather have the environment controlled some while you're playing the vids.
It's valid if you think guys have sleep issues.
I think it's coach hates time that's spent not playing basketball. I mean, come on. Go back through your CBA days. Go back through all... Every coach just railed on the thing guys were doing instead of playing, whether it was video games or before that, whatever they were into. that was the thing. That was the thing that stopped them from being a team and coming together and being tough and doing it like they're supposed to.
All the texters are saying Fortnite is old and busted. It's all about Apex Legends now. Yeah, I was reading about it the other day.
Thing.
Yeah, Twitch is out. Apex Legends is vastly now outstreaming them, and they've already, the esports teams are hiring Apex Legends players. Ninja himself is now paid to play Apex Legends.
To switch over to Apex Legends.
Somebody just had some record number of Apex Legends kills. That's a game I have not seen.
I haven't either. I know it's 3v3 instead of like the Royal Rumble stuff that Fortnite does. So it's more in a more teamwork kind of aspect.
Not only is it more teamwork, that you choose your character as certain attributes. It's not everybody is the same, and you collect whatever stuff you can collect.
More of like an upgradable RPG type platform.
No, your character innately has a job to do because of what you can do.
Oh, class.
Yeah, you get a different kind of superpower. Right.
Really, it's like a mage or a druid or a priest or whatever.
Right, ranger or whatever that is. Yeah, it's got some sort of class. I don't know if there's alignment aspect as well, but it's sounds a little more D&D like in that regard.
Yeah, a little bit. Probably with all the explosions and blinking lights and blue light all over the place, so you're not sleeping at all.
That's really funny, though.
I thought it was good.
But, you know, it's legit. If you get players who are not properly rested, that's the thing. We know it's
also, if you have players that suck, you're going to win 10 games in an NBA season. That's the other part.
The being bad?
Yeah, the being really bad at basketball, that tends to affect the opportunity to win games.
In Woodstock, Derek, you are on the score.
Hey, guys. Just want to get back to the White Sox. Abreu was given the largest contract ever in the history of the organization.
Yes.
And doing a little digging, 24 major league teams currently have somebody on their roster with a larger contract.
True.
17 of them have multiple players with larger contracts. So when are they going to stop being cheap?
I don't know. I don't know when that next contract comes around. And Rick Hahn expressed some... He was frustrated by that aspect and by the line of questioning that exists here. Because as he put it to Lawrence, until we do it, until we convert on one of these contracts, I can't tell you that, you know, I can't prove to you that we're doing this. I mean, that's part of the frustration here. You can search out the player, the generational type guy, the 26-year-old shortstop, third baseman that you can grow with and commit 10 years to without really any kind of any worry outside of just the weirdness of baseball or injury. But until you've got him, until he's there, he's not. Until the contract exists and is signed and is part of your roster, you can't show it as evidence that you're willing to get into the marketplace that other teams are.
It has to be reasonable. The guy has to be there that you feel is worth that money.
Right,
I mean, when you just say stop being cheap, you've got to point to the guys on whom you wanted them to spend, why, where, and what the plan was.
Well, this is the other part of this. Rick also pointed out the couple of things that they've done to prove old narratives wrong, and he's right in pointing out that they blew the international spending restrictions away when they got Luis Robert, and they made a trade with the Chicago Cubs of all teams to try and enrich their prospect depth while doing something, while giving them a player that mattered, Jose Quintana. They've put together a front office, or rather a scouting department that has kept up with all of the technological aspects in baseball. They're one of the 28 teams with a Rapsodo and an Energitronic, all that kind of analytics, all that kind of depth. They're doing all of this stuff, and it seems like what you need as a fan base, what I would like to see too, as an observer of the team and a guy who was over there watching a lot of White Sox baseball for a little while, is that guy, that tentpole contract, that player that's a five-win type guy.
There he was.
And you had the chance to do it, and it's why it makes the Machado thing as disappointing as it was. But I don't need to see the White Sox go out and spend on Dallas Keuchel. I don't need to see them go out and spend on Josh Harrison, who did just get a deal for a couple of dollars, or Marwin Gonzalez. Those guys are all 30, 31, and 32. Those contracts, those players, don't help now. Manny Machado at 26 could eat up 2 years of losing baseball and still be great. That's what made this such an outlier, what made it so outstanding to pursue the player.
And to come up short in the way that they did gave them and look, I thought Rick Hahn was very honest about what it would have meant in that he looked at it as trying to knock down another one of what he says is a myth, knock down another one of those narratives. The White Sox can never do this. They'll never do this. They'll never do this. And to say they would never be a destination for an absolute top of market free agent, that this was an opportunity to do that. That's an admission that they looked at this as more than a chance to get a player. It was bigger than that. It was about some kind of legitimacy. He phrases it getting rid of some sort of false narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of legitimizing the team. That's part of stepping to the fore as a big boy MLB franchise.
Jim Margulis of Sox Machine wrote this out. I think it was yesterday.
Yeah, he was on the Mully and Haw show this morning.
Was he really? I missed him on the way in. Shoot. Jim's fantastic. He's a real good observer of the White Sox. He pointed out the Jason Worth contract that the Nationals signed.
$126 million?
Sounds right. Something north of 110, that's for sure. But at the time, the Nationals weren't quite ready. They were a joke of a franchise. I mean, they didn't have anything together. They put a couple of drafts in. They waited and tanked for Strasburg and Harper. They got Jason Worth when they did, and that was the contract that they were able to grow around. And that guy mattered for them. I mean, granted, the Nationals couldn't win a playoff series to save their lives, but he mattered for that team in terms of legitimacy.
Is it just me, or is this spring training so far? And I know we've got plenty of spring training left to go, but usually there's all sorts of like cute little spring training stories. This has been kind of heavy. There's been so many big things, and maybe it's just because of the Cubs. Everything's been heavy. Everything's been Joe Ricketts' racist, Islamophobic emails and Addison Russell and domestic violence. And it's just the weight of it. I'm used to this time of year being Yoenis Cespedes has a wacky car or this guy has a pet mink. You know, there's always something really, really different and fun and light about this. And this spring training is just not.
There's a couple of those that I can get for you. I mean, we've got some light, fun kickers, but you're right. Islamophobic emails don't come with a fun kicker at the end.
Ah, spring.
And oh, right? By the way.
Yeah, the crack of the bat, the pop of the mitt, and racist Islamophobic
emails.
As
the boys go back to Tempe, here's something for you.
Hope springs eternal.
But remember, it's also underlying those storylines. Is labor unrest.
Yeah.
It's not as though Manny Machado signing his 10-year and $300 million deal with a 5-year opt-out means that the rest of the marketplace is all set and ready to roll. I don't know how long Bryce Harper will hold out for the money he's going to get, because I think that's the one thing we learned about this marketplace when Machado signed is players holding out is the leverage left in a free agent market like this. And for the elite of the elite, the very best of the best, that's what you've got to do, that you've got to be willing to do to get that dollar.
Chuck and Lake in the Hills, you're on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Connor. How you doing?
What's up, Chuck?
All right. So, anyway, the reason why I called was that, the Rick Hahn's a liar. It's really what it boils down to. He might say he's going to spend, but the bottom line is if they weren't willing to offer Machado $300 million, they were never serious to begin with.
Well, what's the lie?
The lie is that they were willing to spend the money when they weren't.
They were willing to spend the money they offered.
Yeah, but they weren't willing to actually spend what it took to get it done. And that's really what it boiled down.
He was asked that question directly by Lawrence. They never had a chance to respond to if this is X, we'll go X plus one. I mean, Lawrence asked him directly, so they didn't have that opportunity. It was just make the offer that you're willing to extend, and then he was going to pick one.
Yeah, excuses.
It's not an excuse. I'm saying that's the way the process went down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can take him for face value, But I mean, I think that if we all sat here in November when this whole thing started, nobody thought that Machado was going to take a dollar less than $300 million. So
that's not true. There were a lot of people that did think it might go under 300, and that a marketplace that has otherwise been frozen might force him down from the money. But the smart bet, Chuck, was that $300 million was going to be the amount he was able to get for himself.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is if they're not willing to go there for Machado, who is a prime free agent on a Hall of Fame track at 26 years old, who are they going to spend the money for? If they're not going to go there for them, then who?
They're going to sign the guy. Yeah, they're going to sign the guy that will take the contract they offered. I mean, it feels like that structure, that 250 plus incentives with a couple of different complications here or there, because that's, I got to imagine that's how a player looks at it, you know, with the vesting options or complications. That's the guy they're going to end up getting. I don't know who that player is, but there's no doubt in my mind they're willing to spend that kind of money that way. Just got to match up the player.
Wacky moment in college basketball last night on perhaps the biggest stage of their game outside of the postseason. Duke, North Carolina at Cameron, and Zion Williamson blows out a shoe. It has made us talk about a lot of bigger things than just that, and we'll continue to do so. Eamon Brennan of The Athletic joins us next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Slipping and injured is Zion Williamson. Back the other way, a layup for Cam Johnson. And 36 seconds into the game, Zion Williamson is down.
He blew through his shoe.
Yeah.
Look at his, wow. Look at his left shoe. He blew completely through the shoe.
So we were debating if and when Zion Williamson comes out, does he take the bait? I'm sure all the other shoe companies are calling him and calling family members right now and saying, yeah, you can't go with Nike. You can't go with Nike. Or does he go with Nike and really lean in and come out with like the blowout Z is the name of the shoe? You see him at the factory. You see him like wearing a hard hat or wearing like a lab coat and pointing at exactly the specifications he wants. Who knows? We could play those games all day. Eamon Brennan of The Athletic is on Twitter, at Eamon Brennan. He joins us now on Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was unexpected last night, but it has us talking about all sorts of big-picture things, Eamon.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the oddest, strangest things I've ever seen on a basketball court, and I'm not, you know, I'm not the most wizened old head. I'm sure there's plenty of, like, for example, Coach K said he's seen shoes break plenty of times. He would be considered a wizened old head. But it was odd, and when it came in the game, in addition to all the sort of lasting ramifications moving forward here, but sort of when it came in the game, totally changed the tenor of the night, obviously changed the way that Duke performed, and I think will sort of be remembered as a really weird outlier in a rivalry that kind of kicks stuff up like that from time to time.
Yeah, Eamon, I mean, there was really no chance for Duke to get themselves back together after Zion went down. You could tell how it affected those players, but Reddish and Barrett had good nights. Do you figure Kay has enough of everything to get Duke back on track and wait for Zion to return?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think the ability to do that, you know, in-game for any team would be really hard, and Reddish said it after the game last night, like, you know, not only is Zion Williamson really good at basketball, but he's their energy. Like, he is the guy who is constantly bouncing around, constantly making big plays, who they know they can get a bucket from every time down the floor. You know, when they were shooting, what, 2 for 20 in the first half from three last night, they wouldn't have needed to nearly as frequently because Zion just can score against anybody at any time. And makes everything really, really easy for everybody else. So you take that away and you take sort of his energy and the excitement of the crowd away and the hush over the crowd and what is normally a raucous environment, obviously. It changes things. But, you know, with a couple of days, Duke is not a team short on talent. And what's remarkable about their talent level is that, you know, RJ Barrett is the guy coming in this year who was the most accomplished prep, who was the number one player in the class by most accounts coming out. And who a lot of people picked to be the player of the year before Zion really exploded into what he's been. So, you know, he has maybe even another level he can get to in an already really good freshman season. And they have guys like Javon Delorier, Marcus Bolden, who can take bigger roles. Trey Jones being back from injury now for a couple weeks has been huge, and that will continue to be the case. There's plenty of talent there, and they can figure it out. But there will be a massive, both literally and sort of productive-wise, gap in what they are moving forward compared to what they have been and what they could have been.
And yet the bigger picture we're talking about is here is this guy playing for free. This guy's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars, and he's running around there in shoes for which Mike Krzyzewski is getting all the big checks, and he doesn't get any of the money. And it was another opportunity to point at the injustice of the free labor cartel that the NCAA is right now. And people say, like, what's it going to take? What's it going to take? Well, that something like that, without having it be some sort of catastrophic injury, that's really all it should take to have some of these players saying, wait, what are we doing here?
Yeah, totally fair. And I think that that's a discussion that I fundamentally agree with everything you just said, right? And that's my view on it. And other people can take a different view. There are the lone voices in the amateurism wilderness out there. They're fewer and fewer sort of by the year. But, you know, I think what's interesting is that I wonder if Zion Williamson necessarily sees it that way, right? By all accounts, he like really wanted to come play at Duke for a year and try and win a national title, and was cool with what that meant for the, you know, sort of the larger socioeconomic picture of college basketball. Like, so, you know, it's, I agree with you, and I think it's a major problem just that people have woken up to, and that this discussion exists in a way it didn't even, you know, think about when Kenyon Martin got hurt, how many people were talking about amateurism and college sports and what the NBA age limit should be. It's just a totally different conversation now, and that conversation is absolutely justified and should be happening. But I do sometimes wonder, particularly a guy like Zion, but there are plenty of other players too who just, everybody feels differently about it. And some guys will feel the way you described, Dan, like, what are we doing here? Why are we risking this? I'm about to go make $10 million a year, and one slip and one busted shoe could ruin all of that for me. There are probably guys who think that, and there are, I think, probably guys who think, no, I mean, I want to be doing this. No one forced me to. So it's complicated. It's more complicated even than all of the large-scale complicated issues, the NBA age limit and the way college sports are structured, and the injustices therein. It's also located on an individual and personal level, too.
Talking college hoops with Eamon Brennan of The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter, at Eamon Brennan. This is Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score. Do you feel as though within players and their circles, collegiate players in their circles, that this conversation has been dampened some because the NBA seems ready to do away with the one-and-done rule sooner rather than later?
Maybe. I mean, again, everybody's different, and I think college kids especially, as we all know, have differing levels of sort of interest in just this sort of stuff. And some guys are just like, no, like, you know, I don't care. And some guys will, you know, describe their collegiate experience, whether it's 4 years or 8 months, as, like, extremely valuable and something they cherish. And I think there's probably a group of players out there who are not particularly thrilled with the idea of having to go play for free for a year, but, you know, also don't want to go play in the G League because it's not really been an established option yet. The sort of early adopters of the idea of, oh yeah, just go play in a different country for a few years, that sort of trend never really took off in a meaningful way. And so, you know, I think that there is probably plenty of discussions happening with that among kids. And I'm sure that, you know, the guys who actually have the most money on the line are probably aware of it, probably more so at the high school level, because those kids will be looking at it and will say, you know, by the time I am a potential NBA draft pick, will this rule be gone? And what does that mean for me? You know, are all of these college coaches calling me and the commitments I may give, are those going to be meaningless if I decide that, you know, and I'm able to go to the NBA in a couple of years? So it may be happening more at that level with prospects and their families and, you know, sort of the groups of people around them. But I'm sure it's happening, and it's going to be a fundamental change in the way college basketball looks and feels and operates, the way the original rule was, you know, in 2007, and it's going to be fascinating to see sort of the trickle-down effects from there.
A couple of years ago, the Northwestern Wildcats had this city captivated, making their first ever run to the NCAA tournament and getting a win, and then giving Gonzaga a run for their money with a disputed call for goaltending and all that. And here this was, the precipice of a new era of competitiveness. You know, there's Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and there's all the celebrity power and all that. And they suck. Like, they are terrible. Why? Why are they so bad?
Well, I would say it's a couple of things. They're just not, you know, they're not a great team this year. They're not a tournament quality team this year. Offensively, they're really bad. I mean, they're the worst offensive team in the Big Ten on a per possession basis, and it's really ugly, you know, because it probably was never going to be high flying and pretty for Northwestern anyway. But when you miss a bunch of shots and you're really inefficient in that sort of style of play, it's bad. But I think the thing this year with the Big Ten is that teams that, you know, conventionally in most years would seem okay and their records would seem much better, look really bad. Penn State is one of those teams. You know, like, you know, it was kind of a joke the other night after they walloped Nebraska that Penn State might be the best 3-12, you know, sort of Big Ten team of all time. And the thing is, it's not crazy because Penn State is like, if you look at adjusted efficiency ranks and sort of, you know, advanced metrics ranks and just wipe their record out of there and just look at sort of how they play per possession, they're, you know, in the 60s, 70s in the country, which usually is right around in the middle of the Big Ten. And last year, for example, when the Big Ten was down, that, you know, a team like Nebraska would have loved to have had a few more of those teams last year that were semi-quality wins that they could go get when they were really trying to get into the Big Ten and won 13 games in the league, into the NCAA tournament, rather, and won 13 games in the Big Ten and couldn't get into the tournament. So Northwestern is obviously, you know, it's really struggling on the offensive end this year, but the Big Ten, just from top to bottom, the bottom of the league is a lot better than it usually is, and the top's really good. And so every night you can lose, and we're seeing that with teams like Penn State, like Northwestern, like Indiana, like Nebraska, all of whom rate out pretty well metrically, but just, you know, keep losing game after game. I think the league is just kind of a brutal place to be this year.
Eamon, last year my Instagram feed was filled with highlights from Zion Williamson and Mac McClung. So I'm looking around for like an appetizer to Duke UNC last night, and sure enough, I settle on Nova and Georgetown, and there he is, Mac McClung. I remember watching his first game of the year and hadn't checked in a whole ton on Georgetown or anything, so I slapped my $5 down on Nova and summarily gave that away because they just gave up against Georgetown. How is that team put together right now, and what do you make of Mac McClung's freshman year?
Yeah, no, Georgetown's an interesting one because last year was sort of a feel-good, hey, we're not really good, but we play hard. And the fans were on board, and they had gotten so, you know, from everyone I've talked to and sort of that fan base, like they'd gotten so worn down by the latter stage of John Thompson III's tenure and sort of the same basketball over and over and the style of play was boring, that anything would have been good. And Ewing's personality and the fact that he's running modern NBA-style sets and not the Princeton offense was just enough for everyone to be sort of pleased. And this year was kind of like the same tenor, I thought, coming into the year. It was, hey, we've got a decent recruiting class. Let's see how we go. Jesse Govan, their center, is back. And I think, once again, Ewing sort of exceeded everyone's expectations. They are, you know, not a tournament team at this point, but, you know, the players that they have, I think, Mac McClung, interestingly enough, was like a, you know, the reason why you saw so many highlights of him, he was like a minor internet celebrity for his dunks and highlights and mixtape stuff, but was also kind of, you know, he was like a three-star recruit. He wasn't a high-end recruit, but he's been better sort of floor game-wise than I think anyone has expected. He's really improved as the season's come along. The main, you know, sort of central recruit in this incoming class, point guard James Akinjo, has been really good and looks like he's going to be the kind of four-year point guard who probably isn't going to have a ton of NBA looks, but by the time he's a junior and senior, he's just going to be really, really solid at the college level. And then Govan is a guy who for 3 years was a conventional center in sort of the classic Georgetown mold. And, you know, his second year under Ewing here, after going to the draft last year, getting some feedback, coming back for his senior season, is now a guy shooting an extremely respectable mark from the three-point line at his size and, you know, previous skill level. It's kind of remarkable, and it gives them what used to be a very slow, very predictable, hand the ball off, spin around, cut, you know, make a back cut, Princeton offense stuff, has become kind of a young, interesting, flawed, but fun modern team that, you know,
is, given how bad the NCAA tournament bubble is this year and given the win they just got last night, is like not super far away from maybe getting into the NCAA tournament. And I think that would be a remarkable accomplishment given where this team and the, even these players were earlier in the year and given what Ewing's done in his 2 years since he took the job.
Real quick, what would stop, outside of just saying Zion Williamson, what would stop this Gonzaga team from being the one that breaks through and wins a title?
Nothing. I don't think, I mean, they're really, really good. And, you know, everyone has concerns about Gonzaga every year. I think they kind of killed that when they got to the title game, but they're always, at least they have been for a very long time, sort of the whipping boy of, oh, you're just not that good. You play a bunch of small teams and then you go to the tournament and lose. And I think Virginia has kind of taken over that mantle of you have to prove it in the tournament. Gonzaga at this point is just, they're a national powerhouse, and their conference has nothing to do with that. They are a program on the level of any high major team in the country, and they're good enough. They are good enough in every facet on both sides of the ball to absolutely compete for the national title this year. There isn't one thing you could point to, I think, that would necessarily keep them from doing so.
Eamon, thanks a lot for your time, man. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Eamon Brennan of The Athletic.
That's some good stuff to file away for conference tournament time.
The bottom of the hour, man. Brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Indeed. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season for games against Minnesota and Ohio State. Tickets on sale now at NUSports.com.
Ooh, all kinds of tournament-y. Put those brackets together and make your bets. I watched Purdue not just beat around the bush with Indiana a little while. That got frustrating.
Indiana's bad, too.
I don't know where they're at. There's some things to figure out. But like you said, that bubble is it's kind of gross. You said you wanted some typical spring training stories.
Yeah, I just want
you said that you wanted like sunrises and butterflies and all that kind of stuff. I have a few for
like
you.
Yolmer's boombox.
I got a few of those.
Bump box.
That's right, it's a bump box.
A few you have just like a little appetizer plate.
A smattering of feel-good spring training stories that'll make you laugh, they'll make you cry happy tears, and some are just damn funny. Also a job that you may want to apply for and apply for ASAP.
Okay, this is exactly what I want and need.
I have this for you.
Coming up next, Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
You can't eat like that.
Why not?
You can't.
Why not?
Because you're going to keel over.
You'll keel over anyway.
Yeah, but you're going to keel over before you want to. Or are you going to get the gout or something?
From apple fritters?
I don't know. How do you get the gout? I don't know anything about
that's
gout.
That's usually protein and purines.
I don't know what the hell either. What are purines? I know you got to eat like citrus once you get the gout, something like that, right? Or those kidney stones.
I know that, but I'm not going to get it from apple fritters because I couldn't decide between the apple fritter. I rescued another. I had to adopt Mariana.
They're
apple
so
fritter.
Lonely.
It needed a home, and I adopted an apple fritter. And then as I'm walking back, because Jason wanted some dessert. Because it's weird. Now he's just constantly eating, and now after I got to eat before hockey and after hockey, and he wanted dessert. So then I saw a box of Mariano's apple fritter bites, which are different.
What are we talking about? Silver dollar size?
About chicken nugget size?
Chicken nugget
like big,
size?
Big chicken nugget size. Right. And a box of those. I figured I'd throw those in too. So I got those, and so that was pretty much dinner.
Yeah, me and Rick and Jay went after the art of pizza yesterday, where I decided to have two of these stuffed crust
two
slices.
Two stuffed crust slices is a meal for six
people. I don't know how I did it, but it leads me to believe, you know, that accomplishment leads me to believe that I really could eat three Jack's Frozen
All right,
pizzas.
Are we doing this or not?
I'll do it. I'll do it after we get back from spring training.
You're going to eat three Jack's pizzas.
Yeah, now I'm in. I'm willing to have, what do you mean you're in? You want to race? Pink slips?
I mean, I'll eat three Jack's pizzas.
You can eat three Jack's pizzas in one sitting?
I would love to try, at least.
I think I could do it. Yeah, I think I could do it. Did we lose the kitchen, though? Because we're doing the remodel of the whole 9th and 10th floors.
No, Shane will make it work. Shane will make this work.
Shane will make it work. Yeah. I have no doubt of that.
And video stream it.
And video stream the thing. I think I can eat three Jack's pizzas. What's a fair time frame?
Could this be as, like, on
over
level
the course of, the
of as bad of an idea
well, that's happening.
As Herb and Rock doing the milk chugging contest?
I know, that's being dangerous. Here and watching
I
that.
Know it is, no, that, but it's also Herb and Rock.
I was here and watching that happen. It was terrifying. I feared for the life of both men.
I was interning at the time.
Were you really?
Yeah, I was like, so this is what it's like?
And then Shane did the Pizza Puff Challenge.
Yeah, I'm unclear. He had like a 10-minute time frame on that, right?
And they were hot.
I mean, he had to smoke those things.
It was a 30-minute time frame. He also ate dog food for
well,
shtick.
That's just...
I ate cat food.
I mean, I do a lot for shtick.
Oh, it's $100? Wow, and well, that's totally worth it.
$100 and shtick.
I did it because I didn't know it was cat food. I just thought it was something they set out in his dorm room or something. So what's this?
One of those nights.
It tastes horrible.
One of those right? nights.
I didn't put it together that he had the illegally kept cat in his dorm room.
That's pretty good.
And yeah, so you're going to make me feel better.
I'm going to try. Yeah, here's a couple of really great spring training stories. One that you and I are going to have to follow up on every single day that we are in and around Cubs camp. You remember how we mentioned that the workout sheet had the Picota projections on
yes.
it for the Cubs?
Yeah,
right?
And they're doing it every day. They're doing like a motivational slogan at the bottom corner.
They are.
Every day.
It's a new one every day. It's not. I thought it was going to be the Picota projections every day, just as the chip on their collected shoulder. But no, it's changing. So we're going to have to document what it is that's on this bottom left. Today, or rather yesterday, saw Gordon Whitmire take a photo of this. The bottom left was, if you're not first, you're last. From Ricky Bobby and Talladega Nights. So that is your...
Okay.
Clearly, there's a theme here.
All right.
It's make you laugh or put the chip on the shoulder, but it's about being first. That is the top one there.
Or not being last.
Well, definitely don't be last. Oh, don't get caught. Ryan Fagan, who covers the Nationals, has this out. And get yourself to the computers as soon as you're done. If you're unhappy with your job, if you're looking for a career change, the Nationals are hosting bullpen cart driver auditions on the 26th.
How do you audition?
The Washington Nationals are searching for a qualified professional to serve as a driver of the WGL Energy bullpen cart for the 2019 season. Aspiring drivers will have a chance to showcase their chauffeur skills during an audition Tuesday, February 26th at Nationals Park. Candidates interested in driving both Nationals and visiting pitchers from the bullpen to the pitcher's mound during Nationals home games have been invited to Nationals Park to drive a test vehicle through an obstacle course in Center Field Plaza. In addition, each applicant will be required to answer questions from a panel of Nationals entertainment staff members. Bullpen cart driver hopefuls have been selected from a pool of applicants who previously submitted their cover letter and resume. Shoot, participation in the tryout is by invitation only and not open to the public, but I bet if you showed up and made a big scene, you'd probably get yourself in.
That's cool.
They're holding cart driver auditions. You get to ferry Sean Doolittle back and forth from bullpen to the mound. That's a treat.
Brandon Kinsler, he's always fun to hang out with.
It'd be great when the Cubs make their trip over there.
Yeah, the Cubs have a bunch of those are some of the
goofy
most fun
bastards in the bullpen. Those are always great.
Yeah, Kinsler's back. We got to find him when we get down there.
Kinsler?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a blast. We also might have to find
Cole Hamels' little cousin. That's,
I'm not. I'm a major leaguer.
I pitch in the big leagues.
Fine. Here's another one.
Yes.
Lindsay Adler covers the Yankees for The Athletic, I believe. She wrote this morning that, you know, players remake their fitness regime and they do the whole, you know, best shape of their life, all that kind of stuff. You ever talked to Tommy Canley when he was here with the White Sox?
No.
Man child. Like, just, he's a 7-year-old in a grown man's body who throws 98 miles per hour. He's the guy who had, like, the WWE stuff in his locker all the time. Okay. He had a folding chair from a wrestling event that he attended that he used as the chair at his locker, just had it folded up and ready to go. But not, nah, I know the face you're making, but not like that.
Okay.
Like a...
Self-aware?
Somehow, I would never say self-aware from Tommy Canley. But he was somehow just a real lovable guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just a real likable dude. Lindsay Adler writes that this offseason, Tommy Canley kicked his Red Bull habit. He says he was drinking up to 5 Red Bulls a day for the last 5 or 6 years, plus 2 coffees for the game. Now it's 1 coffee a day, and that's it. The man was pounding 5 or 6 Red Bulls a day for 6 years, plus 2 coffees. Do you have any idea how much caffeine that is?
Yeah, that's like heart rate issue bad.
So Red Bulls have about 111 milligrams of caffeine in the 12-ounce can. Those are the ones readily available in the clubhouse, you know, refrigerators. But I've seen players with the big guys, you know, the double-size can. and just pound those
the bomber.
Things. And you figure if you're driving to and from the ballpark, that's the one you're putting in the cup holder of your giant truck if you're Tommy Canley.
My cousin's that way with Monster Energy. It's like his whole car is filled with empty Monster Energy
your
cans.
Back teeth start to shiver.
Neil, River North, you're on the score. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Good.
What's up, Neil?
So I got a funny story before I get to the question for Dan. When I was an 8-year-old, there was a box of doggy donuts sitting in my grandmother's house. And the only thing I read was donut.
Donuts.
So, yeah, I've had some doggy donuts. Anyway, Dan, I got to ask you, your obsession for apple fritters. Are you the crunchy type of apple fritter guy or the soft apple fritter guy?
I like both. I think the texture is critical. I think a slightly crispy outside that yields to a soft inside is ideal.
Very good. Nicely done. Enjoy.
Oh, I do. No worries.
Imagine suffering through an apple fritter. This doesn't happen.
There's no such thing as a bad one. There's only some that are better than others.
I mean, I guess you could get one that's really burnt, and even then...
Right, I mean, I guess.
Still a bunch of sugar.
It's still an apple fritter.
Burnt apple, that's all good.
Right. The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. This is the final leg of the Danny Parkins journey. He hosted the afternoon show yesterday.
He's a changed man.
He hosted overnights with Les Grobstein. He is ready to host the afternoon show again. So we are going to check in with him as he begins Act 3. Transition next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.